Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I am the host of Dice Exploder, the Emmy-nominated podcast all about RPG design right here on the Many-Sided Network. And after years of interviews and ideation with some of the best designers in RPGs, my first print game is coming to Kickstarter. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes, a John Wick-inspired game about getting your bloody revenge. Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a game about standing in the shadow of a skyscraper in the pouring rain, bathed in bubblegum neon and someone else's blood, staring down at the man who ruined your life all those years ago, raising the barrel of a gun and asking, "Will you pull the trigger?" Band-Aids and Bullet Holes is a one-shot capsule game box set deck builder RPG, and you can follow it right now on Kickstarter. Back Band-Aids and Bullet Holes on May 5th.
Welcome back to another episode of New Game Showcased. I'm your host, Kenzie Tartaglioni. This time around, we will not actually be running or playing a game, but chatting about one, going over the mechanics, talking about the structure, that sort of thing. The TTRPG Breathless is getting a bit of a remaster over on Kickstarter this month with Breathless Frightmare Edition. First off, what is Breathless? Breathless, originally published in 2022, is a minimalist two-page survival horror role-playing game that inspired hundreds of original hacks. The new edition that launched on Kickstarter on April 7th has revised rules and new art, as well as a campaign mode with scenarios that will last 8 to 12 sessions of play. Everyone got infected. Not one soul escaped that fate. The first sign of infection was memory loss. One moment, you knew your name. The next, you were staring at strangers with no idea who they were, what year it was, or who you had ever been. That was the best outcome. For the unlucky ones, it went a step further. Their skin drained pale, their eyes glazed, and every breath came in ragged, furious gasps. They became the breathless. Living dead creatures which tore cities apart and left the world in ruins in mere weeks. Today, they roam the streets and wilds, hunting the living to feed on their flesh and suck in their last breath. A single bite from a breathless wakes the sickness sleeping inside you, and soon you are one of them, swept into their endless swarms. Now, all that remains is to loot, shoot, and survive. Okay, so we aren't going to fully create a character, but we're going to talk through the process of character creation and the stats and the mechanics that kind of build these characters in this game. To create a character in this game, you choose your occupation, which defines your skills, your starting items, and your memory track. The memory track is a series of prompts that help define who you used to be since we don't know who we are. At the beginning of each session, players unlock the next memory on their track, so you would make a think check. On a 1 to 2, the memory is fragmented, blurred faces, muffled voices, nothing more. On a 3 to 4, the memory surfaces, but it is blurred, they are anchored but uncertain. On a 5 plus, the memory returns in full, specific, and vivid detail, crystal clear. So, for instance, one of the occupations listed here is a park ranger. So in that first session, you would go with their first memory track, which is trail. Who disappeared on your watch? The next session, rescue. Who did you carry out of the backcountry? Next session, poachers. What did you find that was never meant to be found? And then radio. Whose voice kept you company from the other tower? And finally, last breath. What made you realize even the forests were not safe? The new edition here gives you a bunch of pre-made occupations: police officer, nurse, influencer, mechanic, priest, farmer, scientist, park ranger, veteran, convict, teacher. As I mentioned before, this game has a history of hack and homebrew, and so I'm sure if none of these really speak to you, you can easily create your own. The occupations do provide you with your skill dice, and in this game you have 7 core skills. There's Bash, which is all about strength and force. You have Dash, whenever speed and agility are needed. Sneak is about staying unseen and unheard. Shoot represents accuracy and aim. think is used when problem solving is required, also mentioned in the memory track, an example of which I just gave. Sway is for influencing others, and loot covers scavenging and searching. There are initial skill dice in this game, which are given to you through your occupation. So, for example, continuing with the park ranger, dash is a d10, shoot is a d8, think is a d6, loot is a d12, and the rest would be d4s. When you attempt something challenging or try to avoid a consequence, you make a check to see how that situation unfolds. The GM defines the risk and dangers or obstacles, and then you choose a relevant skill to your approach and roll the die that matches that rating. If another character lends a hand, they also make a check, but share the same risks, and then you would take the highest result and interpret that. On a 1 to 2, the action fails. On the 3 to 4, the action succeeds. And on a 5 plus, the action greatly succeeds. So there is a range of success and failures within this game. You'll face consequences. Some will have reduced effects, some will be full consequences, some will be full successes and no consequences at all. After you make these checks, every participant in that check reduces the current rating of the skill. So, park ranger has dash, which is a d10. If they do a check that requires them to roll for dash, their dash then becomes a d8. These skills cannot drop down below a d4, though. The GM may also test how lucky you are by having you make a luck roll. They will assign a die based on how favorable the odds are. You'll roll it and interpret the results. They also may use one of the character's skills as a basis for the roll, but in this sort of check, you will not step down that die afterwards. On a 1 to 2, things go wrong for you. On a 3 to 4, things work out, but not as well as you'd hope. And on a 5 plus, things work out very well for you. Along with the die you have for the 7 core skills, you also have a grit die, which is a d12. When you want to give your everything and attempt a feat of pure determination, you can use your grit. This is a single-use d12 that can be used in place of any skill die during a check. Consequences that the GM gives you may not only result in a check, but in harm. The GM will assign 1 to 3 harm based on the severity. Minor would be 1 harm, serious could be 2 to 3. When you mark 5 harm, you become vulnerable. That means if you fail a check to avoid a consequence, it could mean being taken out or sudden death. There are also advantageous or disadvantageous positions that the narrative can put you in, and the GM will establish that when you make the roll, and it will adjust the roll. So for a check, you could be in a good position, which would give you advantage, which means you make the check with a skill die one step up. So for instance, the park ranger, if they were making a dash check with advantage, they would have their d10 become a d12. You could be in a bad position, which would go the opposite way. It would give you disadvantage, which means instead of a d10, the park ranger would be at a d8. Sometimes a check may be unnecessary, which would be a controlled position, meaning you have complete control and the action succeeds outright. Or a check could be impossible, which would be a dire position, and you face an overwhelming or impossible challenge. You can't succeed on this roll, so you are forced to change how you approach the situation. Now, there are ways that if you've stepped your skill die down to get it back up. The first is catching your breath. When you catch your breath, you reset your skill die to their original ratings, and you get your grit restored. This can happen at any time during play, even during moments of high tension, such as combat. If multiple characters catch their breath at the same time, you'll resolve it in a single group event. But afterward, the GM will introduce one consequence for the group. The second way is through a safe rest. When you locate a secure shelter and can rest for at least a day, you gain the same benefits as catching your breath, but without any of the consequences. You can also clear an amount of harm determined by the GM. For example, if you have a bandage, you may be able to clear 1 harm. If you have a med kit, 2. If you have extended rest in a safe location with medical supplies, maybe 3 or more. When you choose your occupation, you also get starting items. Items represent the weapons, gear, and other equipment that a character carries and is assigned a die rating, which represents the durability or quantity. With each use of an item, you would roll its die rating. On a 1 to 2, the item's rating takes a step down. If reduced below a d4, or it's stressed, you destroy it. On a 3 to 4, the item becomes stressed, but the die rating stays unchanged. And on a 5 plus, the die rating stays unchanged. You may attempt to repair a depleted item and restore a stepped down item with a check, given that you have the tools or the skills to do so. Using an item in any situation could improve a check's position, or lessen the consequence, or remove the need for a check entirely, depending on what you are trying to do. For example, park ranger starts out with a hunting rifle at a d10 and a compass and maps at a d8. There's also a loot check when you want to scavenge a place for tools, weapons, or medkits, though these can only happen in locations where it makes sense or the fiction allows it. On a 1 to 2, you'd find nothing and a consequence occurs. On a 3 to 4, you would find an item of lower quality or quantity, which would mean a lower die rating. Or on a 5 up, you would find an item, the higher the result, the higher the die rating. That was a quick but honestly pretty thorough overview of how to play a character in one of these games. So let's move on to kind of how the game is laid out and the structure of a session. What's this about an invitation? GameFound is inviting you to participate in their second RPG party, a curated event designed to help indie TTRPG creators bring their projects to life through crowdfunding. Whether you're working on a zine, a 600-plus page collection of tomes, or something more esoteric, this is a unique opportunity to move forward with real support, visibility, and expert feedback. Applications will be reviewed by a panel of judges from GameFound, as well as industry partners like Darrington Press, Modiphius Entertainment, Free League Publishing, and Magpie Games. The chosen projects will receive workshops with industry experts, marketing support, one-on-one mentorship, and a community of fellow designers to grow together. The call for submissions is open from May 5th through the 26th, with crowdfunding going live fall of 2026. Let this be the push you need to manifest your game in the physical realm. It's going to be challenging, but if you're able to put in the work, it's going to be incredibly rewarding. Go to gamefound.com/blog for more information and to submit your project today. This episode was brought to you by World Builders Club, a project of Working Families Power, an organization building power for the multiracial working class. The World Builders Club is your go-to dispatch for breaking down the political, cultural, and emotional architecture behind your favorite universes. From romantasy novels and TTRPGs to blockbuster franchises and indie gems. This isn't just pop culture analysis. It's a love letter to the art of creating worlds and the powers those worlds have to shape our own. Their posts are wide-ranging, and if you can't find something that interests you, that's gotta be a skill issue. Because even with a quick glance on their front page, I found posts about The Sims, about Project Hail Mary, about Halloween Town of all things, a movie I ritually watch every October. But one of my favorites was a post about Monk and Robot by Becky Chambers, which is a wonderful duology, a little slice of life about a tea monk and a sentient robot. And the World Builders Club article is a wonderful peek into the themes of the books. So, join the club and build a better world with them by subscribing to bit.ly/WBCManySided or by searching World Builders Club on Substack.
In the far reaches of the world, under a lost and lonely hill, lies the forgotten Tomb of Corridors and all its many ills. This labyrinthine crypt filled with monsters, traps, and treasure seeks to destroy your mortal form and seal your soul forever. Originally called Tomb of Horrors, based off the original created in 1979, included in my version of Tomb of Corridors will be its own background information, a legend of the tomb as it relates to the land of Hyrenor, and quite a few unserious hijinks. I'm Amelia Somm, and I will be your dungeon master. Embarking within the tomb, we also have
Haley as
the Queen's Ravens,
Stella Jo as the Sacrificial Sisters of Alpha Kappa Mori,
Cyrus as a lesbian who keeps coming back wrong.
New episodes release on Mondays, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's recommended to start with a journey. In a journey, characters are traveling or trekking from one region to another over long distances. All travels are perilous in this world, so there will be dangers and threats along the way. At the start of their journey, the GM assigns a journey die to the group, from D4 up to D12, depending on how well equipped the characters are. Each time our characters move from one point to another along a path, the GM rolls a journey die and interprets the result. On a 1 to 2, the path forward is blocked. The rating of the journey die is reduced by one step, and the story zooms in on the problem or obstacle that the group is being faced with until it is resolved. Usually this means the game enters a survival phase until the path is cleared or a new route is found. We will go over survival phase in a moment. On a 3 to 4, the path is hazardous. The rating of the journey die is reduced by one step, and every player must also reduce the rating of one of their skills by one step. The GM may use this pause to show how the road wears the characters thin, creating space for uneasy rest where exhaustion makes every word heavier. On a 5 and up, the path ahead is clear. The group makes steady progress, moving closer to their destination without any major setbacks. Once a journey has begun, characters cannot take a safe rest until they reach their final destination, or by pausing their travels for a full week in a shelter that is safe and secure enough. So, on a journey, the only way that you would be able to bring your skill die back up or regain grit would be through catching your breath. The GM may change the journey die rating during the trip as the narrative justifies it, stepping it up for helpful finds or stepping it down for setbacks. Now the survival phase. During the survival phase, the story zooms in and the tension rises. This is used when characters enter dangerous locations, scavenge for supplies, or come face to face with direct threats. The focus here is on moment-to-moment decisions. The GM frames a scene, describes the dangers closing in, and then asks the players what they do. Choices matter, most actions carry risk, and roles come fast. The third phase is the Haven. In Haven, the survivors can finally stop the endless grind of the road and start rebuilding connections with people, politics, even scraps of civilizations. Keeping a haven safe is never easy, though. One spark is enough to see the whole effort collapse. As such, survivors often need to leave the safe walls to hunt for supplies, bargain with nearby factions, and make sure the dead stay far from home. A haven can take many forms: an abandoned building, a fortified complex, a cluster of improvised shelters, or even a walled city. They usually offer some kind of advantage, otherwise it wouldn't be worth defending. This could be access to clean water, a steady supply of food, or natural barriers would be common reasons to settle. While in a haven, players can roleplay, barter, trade, and pursue personal goals. They can question the GM about rumors, investigate leads, and interact with NPCs. If your group chooses not to start the game on a journey, you could also begin in a haven. The protection of the haven is tracked with three die. You have the containment die, which measures the state of infection in the surrounding area. It tells the GM how many major threats tied to the Breathless they can use during missions. You have the supplies die, which measures hidden stockpiles and preparation. It tells the group how many times they can declare they came prepared, which means pulling a hidden stash tool or improvised gear into play. And the morale die, which measures the will to endure of the group and their community. It sets the number of times the group can catch their breath risk-free during a run. Each of these die ranges from a d4 to a d12. It's set by the GM depending on the haven state. When the survivors leave on a run or a scouting mission, you roll all three. Couple things that I'm finding that I'm really enjoying about this. Number one, I love a d12. My favorite die is probably a d12, and not many games I've played use a d12 a lot. In this game, d12, d12, baby. Also, the layout of phases is really interesting to me because it allows for change in tone and scope that I don't feel like a lot of TTRPGs have built into the rule system. You can obviously do these things, but it's really cool to see mechanically how this game sets it out to pursue a narrative. After a run or a mission, once the characters make it back to their haven, there is an evaluation period where the table works together to answer some questions. There are three classifications this evaluation can result in. You can have a haul, which means that the survivors pulled through the run mostly intact. The GM increases the rating of one survival die, usually tied to the run's goal, by one or more steps. The result can be a cost, which means that the survivors got what they went for, but something had to break along the way. The GM will increase the rating of one survival die, usually tied to the run's goal, by one step. At the same time, they must decrease another survival die by one step, usually tied to the price that was paid. And the final result can be a loss, which means that the survivors came back empty-handed or worse. The GM decreases the rating of one survival die. This can lead you into a phase of fallout. If two or more survival die are reduced to a d4 through that evaluation period, the haven has fallen. Morale collapses, supplies run dry, and the contagion surges. The situation escalates to new extremes, leaving the survivors with no choice but to flee their homes. When fallout begins, the GM declares a new reality for the characters, and the game shifts into a survival phase. If the survivors can escape alive, they must begin a new journey, taking it one day at a time, or seeking a new haven. A fallout phase could also end the game. It could mark the ending of your campaign, or it could simply serve as a turning point where time jumps forward and the players either continue with the same characters or create new ones to carry on with the story. This game is set up in a way that really allows you to decide how long you want to play. Perfect for a one-shot. You can play through a journey a survival phase and a haven phase, and that could be just the one go over, you know, maybe a couple hours of time. Or you can really stretch this out into a longer campaign. You can create a whole world. You can have these long journeys that maybe last for multiple sessions. You can have, you know, your haven fall, as we talked about in the Fallout phase, and then have these characters have to rebuild from the ground up. Or you could even stay in the same world and create new characters, which kind of like one of my favorite things to do is tell different stories within the same setting. And the new edition of this game really brings out the best of that. Speaking of, the new edition, which again is called Breathless Frightmare Edition, is being published by MythWorks in their story pack format. You can check out the Kickstarter link in the description box to get more information about how to back the game and what is on offer, but you can also get the core rules for free on Itch if you want to check it out before you go over there and support them. If you're a fan of 28 Days Later or Left 4 Dead or The Walking Dead or even The Last Town on Earth by Thomas Mulan, this game might be right up your alley. My zombie favorite is The Last of Us, and this game feels like it could offer me that sort of narrative-focused storytelling as well. So, if you were intrigued at all by my run-through of the mechanics here, make sure to go give them some support. But that's all for this new game showcase. Thank you for listening, and we'll see y'all back here for the next new game.